It's good to see you, honey. We should have coffee again sometime. That was nice.
I was a little surprised to realize she was right. It had been nice. I'd been a mess of confused feelings at the time. Still was, really. But Jenny had a way about her. She'd made me feel better. I could tell why Jonah was such a steady guy. Yeah, that'd be all right.
Good. I'll see you around.
I nodded to her and left, feeling a bit off balance. I liked Jenny. Nothing wrong with liking your half-brother's mom. But I didn't really like many people, and it surprised me a bit that she was one of them. I needed to get my head together. I stopped outside the store to text Callie. She was Maya in my contacts, to see where she was. Me. You about done? Where are you? Maya.
Little change of plans. Ran into Shelby. Going to get our nails done. Do you mind?
A flash of irritation made me growl. I didn't mind that she was with Shelby, or that she was getting her nails done. Girls were weird about that stuff. It wasn't anything to me. But I couldn't exactly park myself in the little nail salon and watch them get manicures. The desire to be with her, just to make sure she was safe, of course, was making my back prickle. Me. Let me know when you're done. I pocketed my phone. I'd just have to kill some time while I waited. And if that meant I happened to wander around by the nail salon, who could blame me? Made sense to stay close. People meandered up and down the street. Summertimers wandered with shopping bags and ice cream cones. Locals waved to each other or stopped for a chat. Trent McCulty lumbered by on a big green tractor. He had to stop for Mona Lisa McNugget. She bobbed her way out onto the road, then stopped right in front of the huge tire to peck at something on the concrete. Scarlett came around a corner, dressed in a dark blue tank top and jean shorts. A dog tugged on a leash in her hands. She gripped it tight and leaned backward like she was having a hard time hanging on.
Who the hell's dog is that?
I asked.
Oh, hey, Gibbs,
she said, breathing hard. She shoved the leash toward me.
Take him for a minute, will you?
I grabbed the nylon leash just as it went taut, the dog pulling hard. Wrapping it around my hand twice for a better grip, I gave it a solid tug. I pursed my lips and let out a shrill whistle.
Hold up there.
The dog stopped, turning to look at me. He had tan fur with a white patch on his face. He looked like a pit bull, but on the small side, with a turned-up snout and only one eye. He regarded me for a moment, like he was deciding whether to listen to me. I stared him down. His tongue lolled out of his mouth, and he plopped down onto the sidewalk.
How'd you do that?
Scarlett asked.
He won't listen to a word I say.
I tilted my head at the dog. I guess he knows what's good for him. But Scar, please tell me you didn't get a dog. Between you and Dev and that demon you call a cat, your house is cramped as it is.
I didn't get a dog.
Then where'd he come from? You dog walking on the side now?
You're not going to believe this.
There was heat in her voice.
Some asshole summertimers left him, abandoned him at one of my rentals.
Are you sure he's not lost?
I'm sure, all right. I've been trying to get a hold of them to tell them he's still here. Finally did, and the guy claimed they'd never had a dog. I called him on his bullshit and got him to admit they'd left him on purpose. Said they thought they were doing him a kindness since they weren't cut out to be dog owners.
A flash of anger hit me. The fuck?
I know, it's horrible. They're blacklisted from this town for life. But now I gotta figure out what to do with him.
I eyed the dog for a second. He watched me with his one eye. It was a clear bluish green, so light it almost lacked color. He cocked his head, the tips of his ears flopping forward. The little guy did something weird to that tangled knot of feelings I was carrying around, poked at it. He was awfully cute, and Callie had said I seemed like a dog person. Kinda made me wanna... I'll take him.
What?
Shit, I'd said that out loud. I crouched down, and he got up to sniff my hands. His nose was wet and his fur soft. I glanced up at my sister while I absently petted the dog's head. I said, I'll take him. Been thinking about getting a dog anyway.
All right, she said with a smile. He ain't very big, but he's strong and he has a mind of his own.
Sounds like someone else I know. I winked at her.
Very funny, she said. So, what's his name?
Doesn't he have one? I checked his collar, but it looked new, and there wasn't a tag.
I didn't ask the pieces of crap who left him. They don't deserve to name a sweet boy like that. Although, now that I think about it, maybe if I'd known his name, he would have answered to it.
He licked my hand. I'll come up with something.
Okay. You are now the proud owner of this very cute dog.
She brushed her hands together.
I'll dump the dog stuff I bought for him in your truck.
I scratched his head one last time and stood, keeping the leash tight in my grip in case he decided to run off. Thanks, Scar.
I'll see you later. I'm going to go tell Dev we're done dog sitting.
I watched my sister go, the leash dangling from my hand. Damn it, what had I just done? I looked down at the dog. He lifted his chin, his tongue hanging out. He was cute, all right. Apparently, I had a dog now. Chapter 18. Gibson. Callie was still getting her nails done with Shelby, so I waited outside. I'd stopped at the pop-in for a couple of bottled waters and a plastic dish. It was hot out, and the dog, little guy really needed a name, had been thirsty. He'd happily lapped up water, his big tongue slapping against the dish. I sat on a bench outside the salon, the dog's leash still firmly in my hand. Scarlet had been right. He was stronger than he looked. For the most part, he sat near my feet, but once in a while, something would catch his interest and he'd try to dart away. Come here, buddy, I said, patting the bench beside me. Come on up. He jumped up, his tail wagging furiously, and stood in my lap. I leaned back and shoved his butt down so he'd sit. Not in my face, buddy. Sit. That's right. Sit. He plopped down on my lap and rested his chin on his front paws. I shook my head, scratching behind his ears. Weird dog. Callie and Shelby came out of the shop, laughing together. The dog sat up and his tail started smacking against the bench.
Hey, who's this?
Callie sat on the bench next to me, and the dog went right to her, his tail wagging so hard his backside wiggled back and forth. She laughed, petting his head.
Aww,
Shelby cooed.
He's so cute. Whose dog is he?
Mine.
What?
Callie asked, still laughing softly. The dog kept trying to sniff her boobs. Couldn't say I blamed him. He's mine, I guess. I shrugged one shoulder, crossing an ankle over my other knee. Someone abandoned him at one of Scarlet's rentals. Callie grabbed both sides of his face and rubbed them, bringing her nose close to his.
Oh my God, I love him. What's his name?
Doesn't have one yet.
Oh, Gibson, he's adorable,
Shelby said.
Maya, we need a puppy playdate. He and Billy Ray can be best friends. Oh, they'll be so cute together,
Callie said. Shelby took a turn petting his head.
Aww, I have to run, but thanks for hanging out. It was fun. It was.
Tally smiled at her, and the dog nudged her face.
Okay, big guy, I'm still paying attention to you. We'll chat later, Shelby. Bye, Gibson.
I nodded to Shelby. Her ponytail bounced as she walked up the street to her car.
You really got a dog,
Callie said. I wasn't sure if she meant it as a question. I didn't go looking for him. Scarlet walked up the sidewalk with him, tugging on his leash, and I don't know. He needed a home.
Oh, who would leave you out here, huh?
She asked.
Good thing we found you. Who's a good boy? Yes, you are.
What should... I paused, clearing my throat. I'd been about to say, what should we name him, like it was our dog, like Callie and I were a real thing. He needs a name. He turned and jumped back in my lap, whacking Callie with his tail a few times in the process. I sputtered as he licked my face. Down, boy. Sit. Callie laughed.
Looks like you taste good.
My eyes darted to her, and she glanced away quickly. She hadn't meant it like that, but it still made me think of what it would be like to have her tongue on me. Oh, fuck's sake, even an unplanned dog adoption couldn't distract me enough to stop thinking dirty thoughts about her.
Come here, buddy.
She took his face in her hands again.
How about Cash?
As in Johnny?
Yeah, I think he looks like a Cash.
The first song Callie and I had ever sung together was I Walk the Line by Johnny Cash. Did she remember that? Thinking back on that made me smile. Works for me, I said. We should get back. I have more work to do today. I took them home and left Cash in the house with Callie while I went out to my workshop. A couple of hours later, I heard her voice outside. She was tossing him a ball out back. I stood by the house and watched them for a few minutes. Cash happily ran back and forth, bringing the ball back and dropping it at her feet. Callie's colorful hair blew in the breeze, and she smiled while she played with Cash. I was still coming to terms with the fact that it was her. That 13 years of wondering what had happened to her had come to an end. 13 years of assuming I'd never see her again. My insides were still all twisted, but at least I didn't feel like I was about to pop a blood vessel. Wasn't quite sure when I'd calmed down. Working a few hours had helped. Maybe Cash had too. I still didn't know how to deal with all the fucking feelings I was having, but I didn't want to punch something anymore. Seemed like progress. I went back to my workshop to finish up, and when I went inside the house, I found Callie curled up on the couch with Cash's head in her lap. They were both asleep. Looked like they'd worn each other out. Scarlet had given me a small bag of dog food and a couple of toys, but that wasn't going to last long, and the little guy could use a bed of his own and some sturdier dishes, some more toys, probably another leash in case we needed a spare. I didn't want to wake them. They were awfully cute sleeping on the couch like that, and I felt better leaving Callie with Cash here. He wasn't very big, and if someone did come creeping around, he'd probably just try to lick them, but at least he'd bark. I grabbed my keys, made sure both doors were locked, and went out to make a quick trip into town. Pet Paradise was in downtown Bootleg with a colorful sign out front. The window display had a tall, carpet-covered cat tree and a stack of pet beds marked 25% off. I rolled on in and made a quick sweep of the store, grabbing dog stuff I figured we'd need, or I'd need. I had to quit thinking like that, like Cash belonged to both Callie and me. Despite how comfortable I was having her there, she didn't live with me, not really, and we weren't a real couple. Besides, Callie's life wasn't one that involved things like sweet little one-eyed dogs with stocky legs and happy tails. She traveled too much, didn't even have a real home. I wasn't sure why, but thinking about that made me sad. Shrugging off another rush of stupid feelings, I paid for my purchases and hauled them out to my truck. For a guy who'd always insisted on solitude, I sure was setting up to share my space these days.
"How's it going?"
a voice behind me said. I shut the passenger side door and glanced over my shoulder. A guy in a dark shirt and slacks stood a few feet away, looked older than me, maybe in his later 40s, had a crooked nose. "You need something?" I asked, my voice low.
"Nice town," he said. "You're Gibson Bodine, aren't you?"
Great, this again. Now they were coming to town to bug me. It was bad enough when it was just phone calls. "If you're another record company asshole, I'm not interested. Save us both some time and move on."
"I don't work for a record company."
Something in his voice rubbed me wrong, my instincts flaring to life. He looked nondescript, just a regular guy in street clothes, but he had that look some men had, danger in his eyes.
"Then what are you doing here?"
"Like I said, this is a nice town."
He put his hands in his pockets, but his body language was anything but casual.
"Interesting history."
"Yeah.
I've been to a lot of small towns, and you know what they all have in common?"
"What?"
"They can't let things go,"
he said.
"They tell the same stories over and over. You ever notice that? The old-timers sit in their rocking chairs telling tales. Same stuff they've been talking about for years. Same gossip passed around."
Do you have a point, or are you just making conversation?" I asked. "Because I don't like conversation."
"The other thing about small towns is that people talk," he said, ignoring my comment. "Everybody knows everybody's business." "Isn't that right?"
"I guess."
"Have a good chat with the sheriff?"
he asked. Oh, fuck. Was this about Callie? Did someone know she was here? Or was this just about the fact that I'd been questioned? "Who the fuck are you, and why are you asking me shit?"
"Like I said, people talk. And this town seems to have a problem letting things go."
"Yeah, they talk," I said, "even when there ain't shit to talk about."
"I don't know about that," he said. "Are they questioning everyone who lived here 13 years ago, or are you special?"
I hesitated for a beat, not quite sure how to answer. It was a misunderstanding.
"Was it?"
he asked, looking oddly thoughtful.
"I guess if you'd dropped a new piece of evidence in the biggest case in your town's history, everyone would know about it."
"So?"
"You knew her?"
he asked.
"The girl who disappeared?"
I narrowed my eyes at him. I did not like him talking about her. "It was a long time ago."
"Damn shame," he shook his head. "A girl just up and disappears like that without a trace. Makes you wonder what kind of world we live in, doesn't it?"
I didn't answer. He took a step closer and lowered his voice.
"I'll tell you what kind of world it is, Mr. Bodine. A dangerous one. More than any of you backwoods hicks in this podunk town realize."
"You threatening me with something?"
"No, but some things are meant to stay buried."
He turned and started to walk away. I was about to say something when I noticed a subtle bulge just above his waist, beneath his shirt. Looked like he was carrying a concealed handgun. "Some things are meant to stay buried." Had he been threatening me? Or Callie? Fuck. Callie. I hit my back pocket looking for my phone, but it was empty. Shit. Where had I left it? I wasn't careful about carrying it with me. It was probably sitting on my workbench, but right now I could have punched myself in the damn teeth for leaving it. I hopped in my truck, wishing I had my charger back. It was faster. The truck revved to life, and I took off out of town, my heart thumping hard. She was fine. I'd find her on the couch, still napping with Cash, or maybe taking him outside so he could do his business, or sitting cross-legged on the floor doing her weird meditation thing. Whoever that guy was, he hadn't sounded like he knew she was here, but he'd definitely been talking about her. Some things are meant to stay buried. I tore around the hairpin turns to my property and kicked up gravel all down the long driveway, slammed on the brakes and came to a stop. Her rental car was still here, but she wasn't outside. Cash didn't bark when I rushed up to the front door and shoved my key in the lock, so much for his guard dog abilities. I threw open the door and looked around. Empty. Callie, I called out, barreling through the house. It wasn't very big. It took me all of a few seconds to check every room. No sign of her or my dog. Shit. I stuck my head out the back door, finding an empty porch. No pretty girl out back tossing a ball or walking the dog. Callie, you out here? Maybe Cash had run off and she was hunting for him in the woods. I jogged out to the trees, but there weren't any real trails out here. Henrietta seemed to move through the forests without disturbing a single branch, and the game trails didn't lead this close to my house. If they were out here, they couldn't have gone far, not past shouting distance. I called for her, called for Cash, whistled to see if he'd come. Nothing, just the breeze whispering through the branches. There was a sickening familiarity to it, to the silence in the woods and my heart trying to beat its way out of my chest, fear spreading through my gut. I'd only been scared, really, truly scared, 3 times in my life. The first was when Scarlet was a kid and tumbled out of a tree. I thought she'd broken both legs. Turned out it had just been the one. The second was when Jameson had fallen through the ice and almost drowned. We made a human chain to pull him out, but that could have gone very, very wrong. The third was the day I found out Callie had disappeared. Right now was number 4, and it was feeling a hell of a lot like number 3. Chapter 19. Gibson. 13 years ago. I kicked my aching feet up onto the crate I used as a coffee table, next to a half-eaten, greasy pizza still in the box. I'd worked late, eaten dinner late. That pizza was sitting like a rock in my gut, and now I couldn't sleep. I flipped through the channels, idly looking for something to watch, caught between not tired enough to go to bed and too tired to do much else. I settled on a rerun of some cop show and tossed the remote on the couch next to me. My phone rang and I picked it up. Why were my parents calling? It was getting close to midnight. Yeah. Gibbs, it's Mom. I know it's you, Mom. Your number comes up when you call. Right. Listen, sugar, I need a favor. The hitch in her voice got my attention. She sounded upset, and she hadn't called me sugar in years. What's up? Can your brothers and sister come stay with you tonight? I suppose. Why? It's nothing, she said quickly. It would just help me out. I rolled my eyes. My mom upset, asking for a favor, trying to get my siblings out of the house. She and Dad were fighting again. I didn't bother asking what it was about. It wasn't like it mattered. They were always fighting about something. Sure. You need me to come pick them up?
No, Bowie's gonna drive them over, she said. Thanks.
I hung up and put my phone down. Damn it, Dad. What did you do this time? He'd probably come home drunk again, and Mom didn't want Scarlett to see. As if we all didn't know. I hoped there hadn't been too much yelling. It was like they didn't realize half the town could hear them. Even though it was late, I wondered if they'd eaten dinner. I got up and checked the kitchen cupboards. I kept a few things on hand, easy stuff for times like this. Tonight was going to be boxed mac and cheese, unless Mom had already fed everybody before Dad fucked up everyone's night. Not more than 5 minutes later, there was a knock on my door. My feet hurt, and I wanted to sit and stare at the TV doing nothing, but instead, I had to play fucking babysitter to a bunch of teenagers. "It's open," I said. Bowie came in first, wearing a baseball cap and a Bootleg Springs high school t-shirt. Scarlett was right behind him, her long hair in a ponytail. Her freckled nose was scrunched up like she was annoyed about something. Growing up with three older brothers, she was probably annoyed more often than not. Behind her was Jameson. His hat was pulled low over his forehead, as if he was trying to hide under it. He towered over Scarlett, and I realized he'd somehow gotten to be almost as tall as me and Beau. Made sense. He was 16 now. Jameson shut the door with his foot, then he and Scarlett put their fingers on their noses and simultaneously said,
"Not it!" "Dang it, you guys!"
Bowie said.
"Bowie gets the floor,"
Scarlett said.
"Jame, you want to flip a coin for the couch?"
"I got it." I pulled a quarter out of the change jar I kept on the counter. "Heads or tails, Scar?"
"Tails."
I tossed the coin in the air, caught it, and flipped it onto my forearm. Removing my hand, I let them both look. Scarlett did a fist pump.
"Yes, tails."
Jameson just shrugged, like he didn't care either way. "Y'all hungry?" I asked, dropping the coin back in the jar.
"Starving,"
Scarlett said. No dinner, then. I met Bowie's eyes, and he raised his eyebrows. He followed me into the tiny kitchen, and I got out a pan. "What happened?" I asked, keeping my voice low. None of us liked talking about it when they fought. What was the point? And it just upset Scarlett more. "I'm not sure," Bowie said. "Dad got home real late, and then they went upstairs for a long time. I heard raised voices, but not like they were yelling. I don't know what's going on." I filled the pan with water, put it on the burner, and turned on the heat. Whatever. Y'all can crash here. It's quieter, at least. He got the milk and butter out of the fridge and set them on the counter.
"Yeah, thanks."
Anger at my dad ran hot through my veins. Why did he have to make things so goddamn difficult? Why couldn't we just be a normal family? "Go play cards or something with Scar, will ya?" I asked. "I've got this, and y'all can have a piece of pizza if you want to. It's from earlier." Bowie nodded and dug out the pack of cards I kept in the junk drawer. Like the boxed mac and cheese, they were here for nights like this. When my siblings had to sleep over because my parents were making the whole family miserable. I glanced out into the other room. Jameson was huddled up in the corner of the couch, his legs bent, drawing something in that notebook of his. He hadn't said more than two words since he got here, and I'd probably be lucky to hear two or three more before he left tomorrow. Looking at him over there made my chest hurt a little. He was a good kid. He deserved better. Bowie was dealing cards on the crate while Scarlett sat across from him, perched on the edge of the couch. Her purple cardigan hung off one sunburned shoulder. I noticed she'd replaced the top button with a yellow butterfly. All the girls Scarlett's age had started doing it. Callie had started the trend. Thinking about Callie made me crack a smile as I ripped open the boxes of mac and cheese. That girl was something else, sweet as sugar with a voice like an angel. I wondered if Scarlett or any of the other kids in town knew she could sing. I bet they didn't. Callie was like that, only showing certain parts of herself to the people she trusted. And I was one of them. That was pretty fucking cool. I'd missed her today. She'd probably been hanging out at the lake with Scarlett and Cass and the rest of the kids in town. Not only had I been busy at work, we'd taken too big of a risk yesterday to chance being seen together for a little while. It was an unspoken thing, the way Callie and I hung out without telling people. She didn't have to explain to me why it was necessary to keep it a secret. She was 16, for one. I wasn't about to make a move on a girl so much younger, but other people wouldn't know that. It wasn't about that anyway. Had she been older, sure, I might have seen her differently. She was pretty as a summer day, and who knew, maybe someday, when she was a proper adult. But I didn't let myself think like that. It felt disrespectful to my friend, because that's what she was, my friend. We shared something, and the afternoons we spent together, playing music, singing, daydreaming, were some of the best times I'd ever had. She didn't look at me like everyone else, like she already knew exactly where my life was going and was unimpressed, disappointed even. She looked at me like maybe I was worth something. And yesterday, seeing her face at that outdoor concert had been worth the trouble to smuggle her out of town. I'd made damn sure to get her back in plenty of time so she'd have a solid alibi in case her parents asked too many questions. But man, we'd had a good time. I dumped the macaroni in the boiling water and gave it a stir. Scarlett slapped her palm on the stack of cards on the table. Apparently, she and Beau were playing slapjack. When I had some more money, I needed to get a bigger place. Of course, Bowie would be off to college soon, and it wouldn't be long before Jameson would be on his own, too. A few years from now, I wouldn't be hosting my siblings when things were rough at home anymore. Things changed. By the time we finished up dinner, it was getting on toward 1, so we all hit the sack. I didn't have to work in the morning, so maybe I'd take them all to Moonshine for breakfast. A stack of pancakes would make Scarlett happy. Jameson, too. I probably had enough pocket money to cover it. Wouldn't make up for the shitty night, but it was something. I got up and headed straight for the coffee maker. Bowie and Jameson were already awake, sitting on the floor with their backs to the couch, playing video games with the sound turned down. Scarlett was curled up on the couch, her eyes open, but only just, like she wasn't quite ready to be awake yet. "Morning," Bowie said without looking away from the screen. My phone rang. I figured it was Mom, but I saw the Tucker's number on the screen. "Yeah."
"Gibson, it's Cass. Is Scarlett there?"
There was urgency in her voice. That was weird.
"Yep," I said. "She doesn't look awake yet. Want to talk to her?"
"Yeah, but Gibbs, something happened."
My spine straightened, my back muscles clenching. In that split second, I prepared myself to hear it. Probably a car accident. Had it been one or both of them? Jesus, I hoped Mom was okay.
"What?"
"Callie Kendall is missing. She didn't go home last night."
It felt like I'd been kicked in the gut, all the air rushing from my lungs, and I almost dropped the phone.
"She what?" "I don't know what's going on, but it's scary," she said. "My dad left to start organizing a search."
"Shit," I muttered. Keeping my face carefully neutral, I walked into the other room and handed the phone to Scarlett.
"What's wrong?"
Bowie asked. I hesitated for a second, not sure I could get the words out.
"What did you just say?"
Scarlett shrieked into the phone.
"Callie Kendall's missing? You can't be serious."
"That," I said, gesturing towards Scarlett. Fear turned my blood to ice. She hadn't made it home? It was morning. Did that mean she'd been out somewhere all night? Where the fuck would she have gone? Who would have... Oh, God, no. No, no, please, no. Not Callie.
Scarlet hung up, and the three of them looked at me like I was supposed to have an answer.
"What do we do?"
Scarlet asked, her voice unusually quiet.
Y'all go on home, I said, surprised I sounded normal. She probably just spent the night at someone's house and forgot to check in with her parents. She'll turn up, or the cops will find her.
Hope so,
Scarlet said, pulling the blanket up to her chin. It seemed to take forever and a fucking day for them to clear out. I griped at them that I had shit to do, but that didn't make anyone move faster. I felt like I was crawling out of my own skin. I watched my phone, willing it to ring, for Cassidy to call back and say Callie had turned up. It was all a big misunderstanding, and she was fine. But the call didn't come. And what was I supposed to do? Tell my siblings they had to get home so I could look for her? How would I explain that? If word got out that I'd been hanging out with her, in secret no less, nothing good would come of it. I'd just get her in trouble with her parents, not to mention what the rest of the town would think. Her daddy was a judge, and he didn't seem like the kind of man you wanted to cross, especially not where his 16-year-old daughter was concerned. So I waited, feeling like a tornado raged inside me, until Bowie took Jameson and Scarlet home. As soon as Bo drove out of sight, I hopped in my pickup. I knew where I'd look first. I had no idea why she'd have gone out there last night, or why she'd still be there now if she had, but I hoped to God I'd find her. I drove out of town and turned onto a dirt road. I parked in the usual place and rushed out to our spot, desperately hoping I'd find her curled up in a sleeping bag or sitting in front of a little campfire. Maybe she'd had a fight with her parents and spent the night out here. She didn't talk about her family, and I didn't talk about mine, so who knew? It could explain why she hadn't gone home. But if she was in trouble, why hadn't she come to me? She had to know I'd help her. I'd do just about anything for that girl. Debris crunched under my shoes as I ran. I burst into the clearing, but it was empty. Silent. No sign of a fire, just the log she and I always sat on.
Callie, I called, turning in a slow circle. Callie, you out here?
I spent an hour searching the woods, tracing the route she usually took. I walked toward her parents' house, calling her name. Maybe she'd been out here last night and fallen, hurt herself, and couldn't get home. I didn't find anything but trees. By the time I drove back into town, I knew it was serious. She hadn't been found. She hadn't slept over with a friend and carelessly forgotten to check in. I could tell without even stopping to ask. Knots of people stood on the street talking to each other, their faces etched with concern. A deputy cruised past, his window rolled down like he was making the rounds, searching. And there wasn't a single kid to be seen. The sun shone bright and the air was warm, but no scabby-kneed bootleg kids ran down the sidewalk with lemonade or ice cream cones. No packs of teenagers strolled to the lake with beach blankets slung over their arms. I did a loop past the beach, and it was almost empty. Looked like a few summertimers had set up a picnic, but there was no one I recognized. I circled the town in my truck, driving past Callie's house about a dozen times. Sheriff Tucker's car was there at first. When I passed again, maybe 10 minutes later, it was gone. I slowed down, staring at the big front door. It was like that driveway led to another world with judges and money and important people, a world I couldn't reach. As much as I wanted to go in there, talk to her parents and offer to help, I couldn't. So I kept driving. I took the highway out toward Perrinville, stopped along the way and checked the trails. My mind raced, coming up with explanations, each one worse than the last.
Had she hurt herself on the way home and couldn't get help? She walked everywhere. Had she been hit by a car? The cops had to be checking local hospitals. But what if she got hit and whoever did it tried to hide it, dumped her body in the lake? Or what if someone took her? She wasn't stupid enough to get in a car with a stranger offering a ride. Unless it wasn't the stranger. But why would someone she knew kidnap her? I didn't have a single answer. The day wore on, the sun moving relentlessly toward the horizon. I only stopped searching to make a pit stop at the pop-in, partly because I was hungry as shit, and partly because it was the easiest way to find out what was going on. People talked in this town. Search parties had been organized. They'd been sweeping the town, the woods, the beaches, the hot springs. People were already speculating. Everything from she'd run off with a boy to she'd drowned in the lake. But no one had seen any sign of her since last night. She'd said goodbye to the kids at the beach, and no one had seen her since. I wandered back to my truck, the ache in my chest threatening to swallow me whole. I'd never felt so helpless in my entire life. My eyes burned, and a single tear broke free from the corner of my eye. Something terrible had happened to her. I felt it deep in my bones, something awful, and there was nothing I could do to help her.
Chapter 20, Maya. Shelby and I sat in the almost empty Yeehaw Yarn and Coffee sipping our sweet tea. Billy Ray was curled up beneath her chair chewing on a toy, making cute puppy growl noises. Cash was asleep next to me, tuckered out from playing fetch earlier and his excitement over meeting Billy Ray. She'd called, waking me from my nap, and asked if I'd like to hang out with her and the girls tonight. She was already out and about, so she'd offered to come pick me up. We were currently killing time while we waited for Scarlett, Cassidy, June, and Leah May. Then we were going to head down to the lake with a takeout picnic. Just like old times, the girls of Bootleg were happy to tuck me right into their circle. Gibson's truck hadn't been outside. He'd probably gone into town again, so I'd sent him a text to let him know what we were up to. Shelby and I had been chatting over our drinks, mostly small talk, but she kept eyeing me like she had something else she wanted to talk about. Finally, she leaned closer and lowered her voice, although there wasn't anyone close enough to hear. "Can I ask you a question?" "Sure." "How does it feel to be back?" I took a breath. "Good and strange and familiar and a little bit scary all at once. I've been having a lot of feelings." "I can imagine. I've been Maya for 13 years, and I really thought I'd be her forever. I didn't think anything in my past would be a part of my life again. It hurt to let the good things go, but you had to." I nodded. "Back then, it was about survival. I was a very broken girl." She tilted her head like she was scrutinizing me and adjusted her glasses. "You don't seem very broken anymore." "I did a lot of healing, especially in the first few years when I lived in Blue Moon, and I found my strength. Henna, the woman who took me in, looked at me one day and said, 'You survived, but now it's time to decide who you are, and that isn't up to anyone but you.'" A powerful statement. It was. I learned how to stand up for myself, and I realized that I'd never been weak. I'd survived because I had strength inside me.
"That's absolutely true. But I have to admit, being here is messing with my head a little bit. Not to mention being with Gibson. I keep waiting for people to recognize me or to run into, well, you know. They're not in town, though, right?"
I realized I was tugging on my sleeves, an old reflex. I grabbed my tea to give my hands something else to do.
"No, and I'm sure we'll hear about it if they come back. Shelby smiled. I think June and GT are running surveillance on their house. That's the craziest part. They don't have to do that for me, but they are anyway. None of you have to help me. And no one seems angry that I disappeared and they didn't know what happened. No one's blaming me for that. That's because they understand, she said. We all do. Even before you turned up, we all realized your father is dangerous. We knew this was a lot bigger than just a girl who went missing. I nodded. I wish there was more I could do. I talked to the sheriff, but like he said, even if I come forward, it's my word against theirs. We can't prove anything yet. Exactly. Billy Ray popped up and she reached down to scratch his head. I think we're doing the right thing by keeping quiet for now. I just hope the sheriff finds something they can use. He will, she said. I'm sure of it. Can I ask you a question now? She smiled. Of course. How did you wind up in Bootleg Springs? In a way, because of you. After the case was reopened, the media descended on this place like locusts. I found it fascinating the way the town came together to get rid of them. I've always been interested in community dynamics, so I came here to do my dissertation research. And now here you are. I met Jonah, and those Bodines are hard to resist. You're telling me. I'm glad Jonah found his way here. Jenny, too. So am I, she said. He belongs here, even if he didn't always realize it. Billy Ray jumped up and put his front paws on my leg. I scratched between his ears and his tongue lolled out to the side. Sweet boy, who's a good boy? You are, aren't you, buddy? I cupped his cute little dog face in my hands. He's so handsome. I'm kind of stunned that Gibson got a dog, Shelby said. Was that planned? No. He told me just this morning that he's not cut out to take care of another living thing, but I guess I put the notion in his head, and when he saw Scarlet with Cash, he took the leap. I think it'll be good for him, she said. He's so grumpy, I asked with a soft laugh. Okay, I have to ask. Shelby said, straightening her glasses. Is he like that all the time? Or just around other people? I mean, you're another person, but maybe he's different when you two are alone. No, he actually softens up when we're in front of other people. He's very closed off when we're alone. Are you kidding, or do you mean that? I laughed again. I mean it. What was he like when he was younger? I took a sip of my sweet tea. The same in a lot of ways. He did that brooding bad boy thing well. How did you become friends? We knew each other by sight, of course. I'd been spending summers and holidays in Bootleg for years, and this is a place where everybody knows everybody else. Very true. One afternoon, I took a walk by myself down the beach. I found him sitting alone, quietly strumming his guitar. He was so intimidating, older than me, with a reputation for being mean and causing trouble. But he just looked at me without saying a word. Didn't stop playing, just kind of watched, like he was curious to see what I'd do. So I sat down next to him. That was brave. Yeah, I suppose so. I'm not even sure why I did it. I didn't usually feel very brave back then. But there was a spot on the log next to him, and I just sat. He started playing a Johnny Cash song, so I sang the words. We both kind of lit up. He came in on the second verse, and I tried and failed to harmonize. We got a lot better after that, but that was how it started. It's so sweet, Shelby said. And so un-Gibson-like. I keep wondering where that guy went. He was just as surly back then, but when we were alone, he was different. His edges weren't so hard. I think he's been through a lot. I'm sure he has. And how much of it was because of me? So have you, she said quietly. It hasn't all been bad. I learned to let go and be happy. And I've been all over the world, working with amazing people. She rested her chin in her hand. That does seem really exciting. I nodded and took another sip of my tea. Life on the road has its disadvantages, but it works for me. The door opened and Scarlett came in. She smiled and Shelby waved her over. "Hey, y'all," she said, pulling up a chair. "I've got food out in my truck, but I think Cass is still waiting on June. Catherine got out again."
"Catherine?" I asked.
"June's pet pig," Scarlett said. "She's real sweet." I decided it didn't surprise me that June Tucker had a pet pig. "Oh, of course, I saw her at your bonfire."
"We were just talking about Maya's glamorous life," Shelby said.
"I wouldn't call it glamorous," I said, "but I do travel a lot."
"Do you know anyone famous?" Scarlett asked.
I lifted one shoulder in a shrug. "Yeah, I've worked with a lot of artists over the years. Some are well known."
She grinned. "Ever had a fling with a hot rock star?"
"Sure."
"That's all you're going to say?" Scarlett asked.
"Sure."
I laughed.
"I don't stay in one place very long, so yes, I've had flings with guys. Some were musicians, a couple were famous, or they're famous now. They weren't when I was with them."
"Have you ever gotten serious with one of them?" Shelby asked.
"Not really. Like I said, I don't stay in one place. Long distance is hard, especially in this business. I never wanted to get attached."
Shelby regarded me with interest, and I wondered what she was thinking.
"Sounds like someone else I know," Scarlett said, giving Shelby a pointed look.
"You never know," Shelby said. "Maybe things will change." Scarlett looked me up and down, and I got the distinct impression that she was sizing me up as a potential match for her brother. I didn't want either of them getting the wrong idea. I made sure to keep my voice quiet. "We're just friends, ladies. This whole Gibson's girlfriend thing is just a story."
"Uh-huh," Scarlett said.
"Trust me," I said. "He's not interested."
"He's just too damn stubborn for his own good," Scarlett said. "It's a solid Bodine trait."
"She's not wrong," Shelby said. I glanced at the door as it opened again and felt a sudden rush of irritation. Misty Lynn Prosser came in, dressed in a bright pink tank top over a leopard print bra with cut-off jeans so short they were basically underwear. Her bleached blonde hair was teased high, and she snapped a piece of gum between her teeth.
"Oh, lovely," Scarlett muttered, rolling her eyes. "Don't make eye contact. Maybe it'll go away."
Shelby snickered behind her hand.
Misty Lynn's gaze swept the cafe, then landed on me. Her eyes narrowed and her gum chewing slowed. She sauntered over to our table and put her hands on her hips.
"Hey, y'all."
"What a shame. Our table's full up," Scarlett said, her tone full of mock sweetness. "Guess you'll have to be on your way."
Misty Lynn glared at Scarlett, then turned her attention to me.
"So you're the famous Maya."
"And you must be Misty Lynn."
Her eyes traced up and down my face, and for a second, I wondered if she'd recognize me.
"I've heard so much about you."
I gave her a fake smile.
"And I've heard plenty about you."
She snapped her gum.
"Really? Well, I hope you enjoy your little moment with Gibson. It won't last."
"What's it to you?" Scarlett asked. "My brother has made it very clear how he feels about you."
"This ain't about you, Scarlett," Misty Lynn said with a sneer.
Scarlett started to stand up, but I put a hand on her arm to stop her.
"It's all right."
I met Misty Lynn's eyes. "She's not worth the trouble." Misty Lynn gaped at me. I stood, slowly, like I wasn't in any rush whatsoever. Shelby and Scarlett followed, while Cash got up and stretched. We were done with our tea anyway, and despite what I'd just said, I had an overwhelming urge to punch Misty Lynn in the teeth. I figured I was better off walking away than starting a cat fight in a coffee shop. Scarlett gave her a dramatic eye roll, and Shelby clicked her tongue for Billy Ray to follow, his leash in her hands. I tugged on Cash's leash, and walked past Misty Lynn, but paused just before I got to the door and glanced over my shoulder. "I'll tell Gibson you said hi." Misty Lynn ground her teeth together and her face flushed pink. I didn't wait to see if she'd reply. Just swept out the door with a little toss of my hair, cash right on my heels. "Oh my God, that woman makes me furious," Scarlett said when we got outside. Shelby nodded. "She's the worst." "She'll get what's coming to her," I said. "People like that always do." We started walking down the street, heading toward the lake. Cash got excited, pulling on the leash. Billy Ray tried to outrun him, but Shelby and I reined them in. "Punching her in the nose is still one of the highlights of my life," Scarlett said wistfully. "You punched her in the nose?" I asked. "Sure did. Bootleg justice." I tucked my hair behind my ear as we walked. Bootleg justice. God, I love this place. Apparently it wasn't enough. "She deserves worse for everything she's done," Scarlett said. "I don't understand why she can't get over my brother. He didn't even date her for very long." "And wasn't it years ago?" Shelby asked. "Yep. He's told her right to her face that he's never given her the time of day again. Dumbass can't figure it out." My palms stung, and I realized I was clenching my fist, digging my fingernails into my hand. Maybe I should have started a catfight in the cafe. But I had a feeling bootleg justice was coming for Misty Lynn. Somehow. Chapter 21, Maya. We got to the lake and sat on top of an empty picnic table, our feet on the bench. A warm breeze blew across the water, making little ripples and eddies on the surface. It reminded me of the last time I'd been at this beach, sitting with the girls. I'd been looking out over the water just like this, with no idea my life was about to change forever. I let Cash's leash out all the way so he could run around with Billy Ray. Their playful snarls were adorable. The other girls weren't here yet, and the smells coming out of the takeout bags behind me made my mouth water. "By the way," Scarlett said, breaking the short silence, "have y'all been reading the book for June's book club?" "I bought it, but I haven't started it yet," Shelby said. "I have some catching up to do." "Okay, because it's not what I expected when June said we all needed to read it. I mean, it's Junie, and y'all, this book is something else."
"Really? What's it about?" Shelby asked.
"Well,
Maya,"
Gibson called from somewhere behind me. I turned and lifted my hand to wave, but he ran toward us like a storm thundering across the plains. "Are you okay?" I asked.
"No, I'm not fucking okay."
He stopped next to the picnic table, breathing hard.
"I didn't know where you were."
"I'm fine. I've been with Shelby and Scarlett. I texted you." Billy Ray jumped up, putting his front paws on Gibson while his tail wagged furiously. Gibson reached down to absently scratch his head, but his brow was deeply furrowed, his eyes intense. Cash caught up, his tail rivaling Billy Ray's.
"We need to get home."
"Now? Don't you want to stay and enjoy some puppy love?"
"No,"
he snapped. Billy Ray jumped back, retreating behind Shelby. I stared at Gibson. What the hell was his problem? "What's wrong with you?"
"Wow, calm down, Gibbs," Scarlett said.
He ignored his sister, his eyes on me.
"We'll talk at home."
His voice was strained, like he was trying to keep himself under control. But I wasn't sensing anger simmering beneath the surface. Was that fear in his eyes? "All right," I said, jumping down from the table. I retracted Cash's leash. "Thanks for hanging out. Is everything okay?" Shelby asked. I slipped my hand into Gibson's, and he squeezed back, hard.
"Yeah, I'll text you guys later."
Shelby nodded, but eyed Gibson like she wasn't sure what to think. Scarlett looked worried.
I was too. There was something wrong. He wasn't just irritated that he'd had to look for me. He was upset about something. We walked back to his truck in silence. Cash trotted next to him rather than trying to rush ahead, as if he could tell something wasn't right. Gibson kept glancing over his shoulder like he thought someone might be following. Maybe someone was, or had been. Had he seen someone? The Kendalls? Who else would have him so on edge? Cash and I got into Gibson's truck and I locked the door. He got in and did the same. My heart beat rapidly as a trickle of fear worked its way down my spine. I wanted to know what was going on, but I seemed to have lost the ability to speak. He didn't take the shortest route back. We detoured on side streets, taking a crisscrossing path until we finally left town and made our way up the winding road to his house. The truck bounced on the long gravel drive, the crunch of the rocks the only sound. The silence between us was disconcerting, but I couldn't bring myself to break it. We parked and went inside. A tired Cash went straight for the couch, curling up in the corner and putting his head on his paws. Gibson locked the door behind us, but I compulsively checked it several times before I felt like I could walk away. I checked the lock on the back door while Gibson closed the curtains. "You're freaking me out right now," I said finally. "What's going on?"
"Some guy in town started asking me questions," he said. "I think he was trying to find out why I'd been brought in by the sheriff before you came back."
I could feel the color drain from my face. "What did he say?"
"A bunch of stuff about how people talk in towns like this, and how Bootleg can't let shit go. But it was the last thing he said. Something about how we live in a dangerous world, and some things are meant to stay buried."
I swallowed hard, and when I spoke, my voice shook. "What did he look like?"
"Probably in his late 40s or so. Blonde hair, plain clothes. Almost forgettable. His nose was crooked."
"Crooked nose.
Do you think you know who he is?"
I nodded. "I might. He sounds like a guy who worked for my father when I was a kid."
"Why do I think you don't mean he was your dad's gardener?"
Memories ran through my mind like a film reel. "No, I remember him. He was like a cross between a private investigator and a thug. I'm pretty sure he was one of the men doing my father's dirty work. He'd give him jobs and talk about how important they were. I can't think of his name." Gibson waited while I struggled to remember. "Lee Williams," I said suddenly. "That was his name."
"I'm pretty sure he was carrying a gun."
"Oh, God," I said. "I'm not sure why I know this, but I think if he let you see it, he wanted to scare you."
"Well, it goddamn fucking worked," he said, almost shouting again. "Jesus, Callie, this fucking guy shows up asking questions and then I can't find you. I was losing my mind."
"I'm sorry. I texted you to tell you what I was doing. I didn't know he was here."
"I know. It ain't your fault."
He raked his fingers through his hair, the veins in his forearms sticking out.
"I didn't have my phone and I just..."
"Do you think he knew I was here?" He let out a breath and dropped his arms to his sides.
"No. I think he was trying to figure out if I knew something, or if I'd brought in new evidence."
If the judge's lawyer couldn't get information out of Sheriff Tucker, they'd send someone to poke around. It makes sense. He nodded, but none of the tension had left his body. He had a groove between his eyebrows and his arms were flexed, veins bulging. He took a step toward me, and I took a step back.
"You need to be careful."
"I know, but what do you want me to do?" I asked. "Stay tethered to you all the time?"
"No."
"Then what do you want?" He moved closer, the intensity in his eyes making me feel raw and exposed.
"I just don't want anything to happen to you."
I backed into the wall. "Why do I feel like you're mad at me?"
He put his hands on the wall on either side of me, caging me in. His imposing presence made me feel tiny by comparison, and his eyes never left mine.
"I ain't mad, Callie,"
he said, his voice husky and low.
"Then what are you doing?"
I whispered.
"I'm trying to keep my fucking hands off you."
My breath caught in my throat. Was that why he'd been keeping his distance? Not because he only saw me as a friend, but because he'd been holding back?
"Maybe you should stop trying."
He was so close, so big. Without a single inch of our bodies touching, he held me against the wall, immobilized. A low groan rumbled in his throat, and I could almost feel the vibration in my chest, down my spine, between my legs. He smelled so good, I wanted to bury my face in his neck and breathe him in. Gradually, as if he wasn't aware he was doing it, he inched closer. I stayed pressed against the wall, my chin lifted.
"I'm no good for you,"
he said, his voice suddenly quiet. Our noses brushed, and a hot rush of desire poured through me. My body lit up, nerve endings pinging.
"You've always been good for me, Gibbs."
His head tilted, and his lips touched mine. So soft, so tender. My eyes fluttered closed as he exerted gentle pressure. He trembled, like he was struggling to hold himself in check, or afraid to move too fast. Gibson was rough and brusque. Who would have thought he'd kiss like a butterfly? I draped my arms around his shoulders, and he stepped in closer, slipping his hands around my waist. His beard was rough against my skin, pleasantly contrasting with the softness of his mouth. He pulled my lower lip between his, and I felt the brush of his tongue. That little taste made me shudder. His hands flexed, drawing me against him, and finally, finally, we sank into the kiss. Our lips parted, and his tongue dragged against mine. I slid my fingers through his hair, angling my head to let him take the kiss deeper. He kissed me slow, like warm maple syrup. Sweet and soft and a little messy. I melted against him, yielding to his gentle touch. I wanted it all. I wanted him to devour me. But this wasn't the unleashing of bottled-up sexual tension. This was saturated with emotion, as if he was saying everything he couldn't put into words with his kiss. He pulled away slowly and rested his forehead against mine.
"Shit."
I kept my arms around his shoulders.
"That bad?"
"No. Too good. I wasn't gonna kiss you."
"Too late."
He nuzzled his nose against mine, and I massaged his scalp with my fingertips. He seemed so much calmer, like kissing me had drained all the stress and tension right out of him.
"I'm glad you were okay,"
he said. I nodded, enjoying the closeness. The feel of his hands on my waist, his face next to mine.
"I'm glad I'm here with you."
"Me too, Callie. I'm so fucking glad."
He drew me against him and wrapped his arms around me, holding me tight. How long had it been since I'd been held like this? Strong arms surrounding me, protective and comforting. An embrace filled with emotion, not as a means to getting my clothes off. Although my body whispered soft suggestions, and we were certainly alone. This moment wasn't about sex, and I didn't want it to be. I didn't want to be another notch in his bedpost.
And he was more than something to make me feel a little bit less alone for a night. Truthfully, I didn't know what this was. He turned his face into my hair and breathed in deeply, his arms still wrapped tightly around me. I wasn't the girl who stayed. I always moved on. There was always another project, another artist, another tour. But maybe Jenny had been right. Maybe I had been running. And maybe I was ready to stop.
Chapter 22, Gibson. Rain pattered on the roof and against the windows. A storm had rolled in after sunset, and it had been dumping out there for hours. I lay on the couch, my head on a pillow, a blanket over my legs, and stared at the ceiling, listening to the rain. Cash snored softly on his dog bed in the corner. I couldn't sleep. The memory of Callie's lips against mine was visceral, like she'd imprinted herself on me. Her mouth had molded with mine so perfectly, her lips soft and